This is Finally Alive Radio, where we discuss God, relationships, and you. Visit us at finallyaliveradio.com. That's finallyaliveradio.com. Now, let's listen to Gary Aris.
All right, so let's go to Leviticus 11. That's basically what we're talking about here. So we talked about clean and unclean animals. What does that mean? What is clean and what is unclean? What does that even mean? And we looked and saw that the word clean, and I have it up here, tahor at the very top, is the word generally like for clean, pure. Those were some other words that we saw in the Old Testament. So it just depended on what we were talking about. Context told us what, in that sense, tahor was, right? What did we say? We saw pure was one. Remember the gold? Kind of in a moral sense, we saw that. We saw talk about Torah being quote-unquote clean, right? Which it is, obviously. So health-wise, you're clean, right? We talked about that, Leviticus 13. We also saw clean by purification, and we'll talk more about that stuff. But we'll look at the unclean today. And remember, the motivation for this is more Hebrew root stuff. Again, we've been trying to get away from it, just because it's such a dumb subject, if you ask me. But obviously, that's the direction we just keep going in. So now we look at the unclean. We look at what is unclean. That's the bottom word, tameh, and looking at different ways that is used. And again, what we're doing is we want to understand the best that we can, what is the Bible saying, Old Testament, are we under the law? Of course not, we're not. But understanding it, that is our responsibility. Could you live off of just the New Testament? Yes, you can. But this is me maybe personally. It's hard to in these days. I mean, obviously, that's where salvation is. It's in the New Testament, no question about that. But we're also living in the information age, and it's so easy for a new Christian to fall apart when you just don't understand. That whole information age seems to be eating people up, you know. So just my thought. I think we need to be better educated in this and understand these things. Anyway, so the typical idea of being unclean, and we've heard this even maybe growing up or TV or even in a mocking in a funny way. Oh, if you're unclean, what are you? You're dirty. You're bad, right? Sinful. That's unclean. Or we talked about in a Jophie's class being unpure, right? Pure and unpure. How to do with, you know, virginity. You know, that's pure if you're a virgin. Well, there's truth to that, but there's also, I guess we'll call it the Western way of looking at it, right? It's devolved, if I can say it like that. So it's none of the above. Let's go to Numbers 19 just to kind of kickstart our talk about unclean. This all connects to some of the stuff that we talked about last week, obviously. So, or some of the verses that we'll touch on here. So Numbers 19, verse 8. So Numbers 19, verse 8 says, "The one who burns the heifer shall wash his clothes in water and bathe his body in water and shall be unclean until evening. And a man who is clean..." Now, what's interesting is, wait, you've already taken the bath. We've talked about this. This is the argument over and over. You took your bath, you washed yourself, right? But you're still considered unclean until the end of the day. So again, back to hygiene. It's not a hygiene thing. Verse 9, "And a man who is clean shall gather up the ashes of the heifer and deposit them outside the camp in a clean place. And they shall be kept for the water for impurity for the congregation of the people of Israel. It is a sin offering. And the one who gathers the ashes of the heifer shall wash his clothes and be unclean until evening." Once again, "And this shall be a perpetual statute for the people of Israel and for the stranger who sojourns among them. Whoever touches the dead body of any person shall be unclean 7 days." So what did that have to do with you being a sinner, you being a bad person? Nothing. Nothing at all. Okay, yeah, so verse 10, "shall wash his clothes and be unclean until evening." So definitely not a hygiene thing. So unclean, what type of unclean is this? They're like purification rites, but we're going to talk more about that. We'll just leave it there for now. But we're just looking at the word. I'm going to explain more later. Let's go to Isaiah 6. This is a good one with Isaiah. You guys know this one. But more unclean talk here. We'll start at verse 3. "And one called to another said, Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory." Keep that on the side. I totally forgot that verse was here. But that's all connected to what we're talking about here. Verse 4, "And the foundations of the thresholds shook at the voice of him who called, and the house was filled with smoke." And why is it filled with smoke? God's about to show up, right? Remember, you can't see him. Who has seen God? Nobody, and you can't see him. You'll die. And that's also all connected to what we're talking about. Verse 5, and I said, woe is me, for I am lost. And what does that even mean? What does woe is me, for I am lost mean? Woe is me, because God just showed up to me. And this is the typical answer that you want to have. It's the first response, oh no, right? Something is about to go down, right? Okay, I have this note that I had written down saying, it is astonishing enough that he has been allowed to see Yahweh, God, right? And still be alive. So that there's one idea. Hebrew tradition held that to be impossible. Pointing it back to Exodus 24:10, you can't see God. And here he is right before the Lord. And just the thought there. That was an interesting thought there. So woe is me, for I am lost. Oh my gosh, I'm in the presence of Yahweh. What in the world? This is actually impossible, because we all know you can't see him. For I am a man of unclean lips. And that's what we're talking about, the unclean aspect. So what is he talking about here? Is it washing? Is his mouth, is he a potty mouth? Well, so this goes into a couple different directions, but all kind of encompassed in this. The idea of him being unclean is he lives in a town, right? Or with people that have unclean lips. And the idea would be, you're not speaking the truth. And part of the truth is Yahweh is, right? God is. And these guys or this, his people, let me explain this too. If God shows up to someone, in many cases, he also has to answer in a way for the people, like Moses. He shows up to Moses, and you don't really have to answer for the people, but you're kind of answering for the people. You were the spokesman for the people, in a sense. And there is kind of a, I don't know if it's a nuance or if there's a connection there, that, okay, well, you're going to show up to Isaiah. Oh, no, woe is me. I can't believe I'm in front of you, and I'm still alive, and we're about to talk. But I'm the guy with unclean lips. Basically, I'm coming from people who have unclean lips. We don't speak the truth. They don't speak the truth. They don't uphold you the way you're supposed to. This is a problem. And obviously, I must be on God's territory. That's a big thing. Remember, even with Moses, take your sandals off, right? You are on holy ground. So when you are in the presence, and this is all connected, guys. I'm kind of, again, gestalting a little bit here. But when you're in the presence of God, you're on holy ground. Whether it's holy or not, it is now. That's just the way it works. Wherever he is, it's holy, which is connected to what we were talking about in verse 3. Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. Why does that keep happening? Why do the angels keep jibber-jabbering and saying that? And we're going to see that in Revelations. Holy, 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 right? Doesn't stop all day long. Why? Because he is. He is so holy that it has to be said over and over and over. Again, all connected to this whole unclean and clean thing, you'll see. But unclean lips, why? Because he says bad words? No, because his town speaks not the truth. Okay, I'll put it that way. That sounded very King Jamesy. Not the truth. But that's the issue here. It's an impure nation, and he's, in a sense, the spokesperson, if you will. And oh no, what do we do? So there's an element of impurity here, but is it because he sinned? No, because we all do. Because we're all broken and bad. And the problem, let's clarify this. What is acceptable unclean? That sounds so weird. What's the acceptable unclean versus the unacceptable unclean? And this is all connected. So there's deliberate versus basically not, okay? That is the difference between everything, specifically in the Old Testament. Because unclean, we're going to see unclean many different times. But then you can either be very deliberate of trying to be unclean or trying to mingle with the other cultures and their false gods or not. So I hope that makes sense, Isaiah 6, the impurity of the nation, because that's exactly what they were. But impure in the sense of you're bad people? No, because they're not upholding God's law, his spirit, right? The spiritual aspect of this. Let's go to Ezekiel 22. And we didn't read God's fix to it. Let me burn your mouth, right? What does that do? But do you see it goes right back to, okay, now you're considered clean? So perhaps a little bit of a conscious thing too. I do want to put that in there. I think it's unfair not to mention that. Maybe his conscience was messing with him, because you're in front of God, you're going to think the worst, right? Because it's true. He's not worthy to be in front of him. So then there's that. So Ezekiel 22, I'll go to verse 1. And the word of the Lord came to me saying, and you, son of man, will you judge the bloody city? Then declare to her all her abominations. You shall say, thus says the Lord God, a city that sheds blood in her midst, so that her time may come, and that makes idols to defile herself. And there's your word right there, defile. You have become guilty by the blood that you have shed, and defiled by the idols that you have made. So how do you get defiled? Or how do you become unclean in this case here? You're defiled. You're basically mixed in with the other stuff, right? Let me read verse 4 again. You have become guilty by the blood that you have shed and defiled by the idols that you have made. And you have brought your days near. The appointed time of your years has come. Therefore, I have made you a reproach to the nations and a mockery to all the countries. So do you see the deliberateness here? If you're building an idol against God, it's very deliberate, isn't it? And we're going to see the not deliberate pretty soon here. So that makes a big difference too. What kind of unclean are we talking about here? Because there is unclean, but then there's deliberate unclean, where you're going on purpose building idols, and that is clearly defiling. So I hope that makes sense. There's another aspect there for you. So when you're defiling, so just looking at that, could we call that idolatry? That's a good way to put it, right? In one word. Verse 5, those who are near and those who are far from you will mock you. Your name is defiled. That's the same word there. It's tamei. You are full of tumult. So now your name is defiled. Your name is considered unclean. So now look at all these different ways of look. The word unclean, not unclean, tamei is being used. You're defiled. Basically, I'm using soft terms here. Messed up because you're building these idols, idolatry. But then on top of that, your name is tamei too. That's a different kind of tamei, right? First, you're mingling, but now your name is you can't say face anymore, can you? Your reputation, how about that? That's a good way to put it. So you can be unclean in the sense of now your reputation is defiled. I'm using the same word there, but let's go to Leviticus 12. So look at all these different ways we're using this. I want to say we read this last week, I remember, but again, all connected together. Leviticus 12, verse 1 says, "The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the people of Israel, saying, if a woman conceives and bears a male child, then she shall be unclean 7 days. Now explain to me, how is that connected to anything? Why is she unclean all of a sudden? Again, what is she defiling? No idols here. She didn't say a bad word that we know of. It doesn't say anything about that. But she's considered unclean for 7 days because she gave birth. You bear a child, ladies, you're unclean. 7 days. Menstruation, sorry for that hell, but then on top of that, you're considered unclean. So double whammy, enjoy, right? So verse 3, and on the 8th day, the flesh of his foreskin shall be circumcised. Then she shall continue for 33 days in the blood of her purifying. She shall not touch anything holy, nor come into the sanctuary until the days of her purifying are completed. Hint, hint, guys. Again, back to holy ground. Back to wherever God is, it's holy. Wherever God is, it's his stuff. You don't mess with his stuff. There's my stuff and there's everyone else's stuff. I hope you're seeing the connection with all this here. But if she bears a female child, then she shall be unclean for 2 weeks, even worse, as in her menstruation. And she shall continue in the blood of her purifying for 66 days. Again, what's the difference between, you know, the one's a boy, one's a girl? But why is she considered unclean? That's the big question here. Verse 6, and when the days of her purifying are completed, whether for a son or for a daughter, she shall bring to the priest at the entrance of the tent of meeting a lamb, a year old for a burnt offering, and a pigeon. So there's all these offerings. And then here's a turtle dove for a sin offering. Verse 7, and he shall offer it before the Lord and make atonement for her. Then she shall be clean from the flow of her blood. This is the law for her who bears a child. So there's an offering when you have a child. What's up with that? Why is it considered unclean? Last verse here, verse 8. And if she cannot afford a lamb, then she shall take two. So there's ways around it. Basically, you need to make an offering when there's a child involved. Why? And then it's considered clean. That's the last word here. And she shall be clean. So here's an interesting thought. I don't know if you've realized this yet, but there's a lot of types and shadows continuously. A lot of symbolism. Not symbolism. That's the wrong word. But symbolic aspects here. If we really think about it, what's happening here? There's a new life that's born, right? New life. And then there has to be an offering. It seems like, and this is just my own studies that's making the best sense to me, because otherwise, why else would you offer anything up? There's got to be a connection. Again, if everything is a memorial, something that reminds you of something, that's kind of like the whole thing with the Old Testament, right? It's a reminder of this to that, or a type and shadow of something else. Perhaps then this is a type and shadow, probably more so of a remembrance of Genesis 3. Were you thinking, okay, great, awesome. I'm glad that you caught that. That's exactly it. We're connecting it all back to, oh, don't forget, you're in a fallen state. So when you have a child, you have to make an offering because they're unclean, you're unclean. The entire thing is messed up. Don't forget, you guys are broken, okay? This is very important. What is God doing over and over and over? When you have a kid, when menstruation, when you eat, every part of your life is a reminder of, yeah, you're unholy. Don't forget and do your best to be holy, okay? That's the whole thing, over and over and over. But notice that there wasn't a sin committed there, but it's a reminder of a past sin, what they call original sin, right? That's the only thing that makes sense to me, but, you know. Let's go to Leviticus 14. Verse 1 says, "The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, 'This shall be the law of the leprous person. For the day of his cleansing, he shall be brought to the priest. The priest shall go out of the camp. The priest shall look. Then if the case of leprous disease is healed in the leprous person, the priest shall command them to take for him, who is to be cleansed, to live, clean birds, and cedar wood, and scarlet yarn, and hyssop.'" Verse 5, "And the priest shall command them to kill one of the birds in an earthenware vessel over fresh water. He shall take the live bird with the cedar wood and the scarlet yarn and the hyssop and dip them, and the live bird in the blood of the bird that was killed over the fresh water. And he shall sprinkle it 7 times on him who is to be cleansed." Are you guys bored yet? It's boring, isn't it? Why is it boring? It is so detailed and it doesn't make any sense. Right? I mean, in one sense, right? But I want you guys to appreciate how detailed God makes it on purpose. Why? Because if you're going to be in my presence, you've got to be perfect. Therefore, basically, I have to give you the rules or the laws perfectly. And you have to keep them perfectly. Right? Old Testament, right? Typical of Old Testament. Everything is tough. Remember the New Testament says the law was like a tutor. The tutor that would basically beat you into doing it the right way. That's exactly what it is. Notice how it's so stringent. "He shall sprinkle it 7 times, verse 8, and he who is to be cleansed shall wash his clothes, shave off all his hair, and bathe him in water." But remember, the leprous person, what's he considered? Clean or unclean? Unclean. What does that have to do with your sin? Nothing. No sins are committed there, right? So it's definitely a reminder. There's reminders here, especially with Leviticus 12. There's a reminder back to chapter 3. It's more like purification rites, right? The unclean, and then you become clean by purification, right? So very important here. What makes one clean or something clean versus what makes something unclean? It all has a connection to holiness, all right? This is like the key to all of this. It has really nothing to do. I mean, the food's in there, but it's not about the food. There's a woman having a baby. She's unclean, but it's not about any of that stuff. It's all about holy and unholy. Remember what we talked about last week. There's God's and then there's everything else. That's the whole point of this. But you guys know the answer to this one. When Adam and Eve fell, what did they really lose? You guys know the answer to that? They lost. They lost life. They now can die. So there's got to be an element. If you're within that holy realm, that holy then must equate to life. And then the common, the impure, has to connect to death. That's what this is all about. God's and everything else, and everyone else's stuff, right? Man, we said that last week. That's what this is all about. There's holy and common, pure and impure, but life versus death. So looking back at the clean and unclean animals in Leviticus 11, you don't have to go there, but just thinking about that. Thinking about this, holy versus common, pure and impure, life versus death. One element we can say, all the animals that they can eat, basically that chew the cud, right? They're all vegetarian. But there's even an element of this in there. And is it quite across the board? To an extent. But then there are animals who have the different kind of feet, right? So you can't eat that one, even if they chew the cud. So but there's something about chewing the cud that's important because it's not taking life, right? Blood. Blood is life, right? So there's something about that. But is it about the food? Is it about the clean and unclean animal? No, it's not really about the animal. It's about what's behind it. Holy or common? Pure or impure, life, death, right? God and everything else. Do you see that? I hope that makes sense there. Let's go to Leviticus 10 really quick here. Oh yeah, this is the one with the unauthorized fire, right? The strange fire, that's the way it started. And do you see even that? Strange fire is what? I mean, you have the choices there. Yeah, it's common or unholy. Yeah, either one is fine. But it all connects back to you can't give unholy, you can't give the common to what is holy, right back to God, because he is what? He's life. His presence is life. If you look at verse 10, you are to distinguish between the holy and the common, right? And between the unclean and the clean. And here's your contrast, right? Okay, let's go to 15 now, Leviticus 15. So is God inclusive? Clearly, he isn't. He's very exclusive. There's his stuff, and then there's everything else. Yeah, he seems to like borders, doesn't he? He seems to like walls, doesn't he? Pun intended. But I mean, it's interesting. There's some, but common sense, don't you? Don't you like your house walls, right? When you go home, well, you feel safe. It's my sanctuary. Isn't that funny we use these words? It's my sanctuary. It's my holy ground, right? The outside does not come in here. They're not allowed to, right? Certain people are not allowed in this house. Why? Because to me, they are unholy. They're not unholy to me. That's fine. Go to your house. But this house, it's considered unholy. I don't like it. I'm not okay with it. But the ultimate house, obviously, is God. And this is the crazy part. There's his land, and then wherever he walks. Israel is considered his, right? Israel, it's his people, it's his land, it's his, I'll leave it at that, it's his land, it's his territory, that's the word I'm thinking of. But then, it's also wherever he goes. So it's kind of crazy because, well, that's God. He runs a show, wherever he goes, it's holy. Deal with it. Whether it's holy or not to us, or, well, wait a minute, that's not Israel, it doesn't matter. He shows up, it's holy. Hey, in fact, take off your sandals. That ground is holy. It's God. That's Yahweh for you. All right, finally, Leviticus 15. Back to more separation here. Verse 30, and the priest shall use one for a sin offering and other for a burnt offering. The priest shall make atonement for her before the Lord for her unclean discharge. That's the part we skipped in with the discharge. Why is she considered unclean when it comes to discharge? That's I mentioned that a minute ago. In fact, even if I could, you know, sperm is even considered unclean. I mean, once the discharge is done, why is that unclean? How all of a sudden are you unclean? Back to holy and unholy. Let's just look at the comparisons here. What is happening with a discharge? Okay, any kind of discharge. What does that mean? In this sense, not a baby, but in this sense, it's a type of death, isn't it? In a weird way, right? Again, we have to look at it from their perspective. The type of death there. Back to Genesis 3 kind of stuff. Life and death. It's a reminder of life and death. Remember what you guys lost, guys. You guys lost life. So that's why you guys have to keep doing this. Even when you're, you know, having sex, okay? Even when there's a discharge, okay? Even when you have a baby, don't forget Genesis 3 all over again. Don't ever forget that. When you eat, clean and unclean. Oh, yeah. Don't forget, okay? Holy. Holy and unholy, right? So you, no matter where you turn, you're reminded that... Can I say it this way? That we're losers, that we lost, that we are back under original sin. You have no way out. Lucky for you, you get to do an offering, but that doesn't cover it because then again, you got to do it again next year. It never stops continually, right? It says in perpetuity, right? Forever. You have to do this forever. So more and more discharge stuff there. I don't want to go too far into the discharge, but it's back to unclean. I want you guys to see that. So then tamei, right? That's our word for unclean or impure. Is going to stand for the forces of death, the negative, where clean is going to stand for the force of life, kadosh, right, holy. It's the polar opposites here. We looked at Leviticus 11:3 with the preserving of life. That's a big thing. So why does God do this? That's what we're going back to, right? We understand Genesis 3. That's the big reminder. And I'm just going to read this to you guys because probably better if I read it. It says here, if people are unclean... It doesn't make God disappear, right? Does that mean if people are unclean, oh, does that mean God has no more powers there? He can't perform or he's... Because he leaves, right? He's no longer there. Does it cancel out his power? No, it doesn't. On the other hand, it's the other way around, actually. You have to be holy to be in his presence. Otherwise, if he stays there, you die. You are destroyed. Pure and impure cannot be in the same place, right? It's the horrible analogy, oil and vinegar. It will not mix. But in this case, it's not oil and vinegar because if it's in the presence of God, it will die. That's just the way that works. It's too holy, right? That's, again, why holy, holy, holy is being boasted all day. It has to be. It better be because he's that holy. Anything impure, anything unclean goes before him, it dies. It's destroyed. No way around that, right? So it's actually the other way around. It's not that God loses his power and he can't. No, he leaves for your sake so you don't die. Right? He cannot be in your presence because, well, you're unclean. Then we saw the deliberate and then the not deliberate. So that's kind of interesting too. So then we also see the element of grace that he has for his people, that even though you're considered unclean, not deliberate, but it's unclean. I mean, if a woman has a baby, what do you do with that? I mean, she didn't, you know, it's not like a deliberate, like, quote unquote, sin, but there's grace. There's actually grace from God's perspective that, well, he understands that you're going to be unclean. But the problem over time, and this is typical humans, I mean, any of us would have done this, is that it just turned into more of a tradition or more of let's keep the law, right? Rather than, I just want to make God happy because that's what he wants. So that becomes an issue later on, and that's why we kind of, they lose their focus, and then it's all about keeping the law and not so much keeping God happy. But ours is different. Ours, New Testament, whole different terms. I don't have to remember Genesis 3. I just have to remember Jesus. That's it. And that becomes everything. And even in Hebrews, right? I love that book because it basically talks about the law over and over and over, but it replaces the types and shadows with Jesus, right? The blood of bulls and goats. What is it? Hebrews 8, 9? Right? Blood of bulls and goats isn't going to cover it. Oh no, but Jesus will. This is the one. This is the one that's going to cover it all. It takes us out of that torture chamber of the law, right? Is it perfect? Yes, it is. Absolutely. Is it clean? Is it pure? Use the word tahor to describe it. Yeah, it is. Of course it is. But it's horrible for us because we can't keep it. So do you see? It takes it all back to, you want to be holy. You can't do it. But I know a guy who is. You just believe in him, right? Back to the gospel. You believe in him. It takes care of that. That's what's so great about Hebrews, is it covers all that. Yeah, remember the Old Testament? Remember this law and that law? Yeah. Now we have a new priest, right? Remember it was like this? Now it's Jesus, right? Looking unto Jesus, right? It's all back to that, right? That's the key part here. Even temple talk, right? I mean, we can talk temple. Old Testament, that's where you go, right? You go and do your rituals. I'll leave it at that. What about New Testament? Because here's the issue. Remember, if we're going to keep the law, this is the big argument with me and the Hebrew Roots movement, right, quote unquote, is if you're still going to keep the law, then where are you making your sacrifices? Where's your temple, right? Where's your altar? That's a big problem. But the issue is, if you're not going to look at what Jesus said, what did he say? This temple will be destroyed. 3 days later, what? It'll rise. What temple is he talking about? Physical temple? Well, it is a physical temple, but not a temple like they're thinking. This is where they miss it. This is where Hebrew Roots miss it. Unfortunately, the Jews miss it. Is that that's not the same temple. Old Testament, you have to go to a place, right? Where do we have to go? Exactly. You're the temple. God has put it inside of us, right? Big difference. Big difference. So yeah, the temple, it's you. Now, you're holy. How are you holy? Because of what you did? Of course not. No. Because of who he is. That's it. It takes all the pressure off of us. I hope going over this, one, I don't like the Hebrew Roots stuff, but two, to really appreciate what Jesus did. To understand, oh my gosh, this is such a headache. Going through the Old Testament, what a headache and how boring, and it's mind-numbing, if you ask me. It is truly mind-numbing, but it goes to show how perfect God is and how stringent it is to be perfect. Literally impossible. And in comes Jesus, right? That's back to our source there. But yeah, even temple talk. I mean, you can't keep part of the law and not the other law. If you're going to go and do the clean and unclean animal thing, then you got to go and do your offerings too. So, but what's the new temple? It's you. It's in you. It's inside of us. The Spirit of God is inside of us. So if Jesus says, basically, he was a temple, then the temple is here. So there's a different kind of temple. What is the church? It's us. It's not the building. Thank God for the building, but it's us. Us coming together, right? You see, it's all connected. It's all similar.
Thank you for listening to Finally Alive Radio. If God has touched your heart with any part of today's message, let Gary know by contacting him on finallyaliveradio.com. Would you like to download this episode for free? Now you can. Finallyaliveradio.com has every episode ready for download absolutely free. We'll meet you again next time when we look at God's Word with your very own Christian counselor, Gary Aris, and learn how to finally be alive in Christ.